when we looked at what was going on in the overall market with Volkswagen going there and the tech industry and distribution, and you look at the options for them with Class A, and we felt this property would lend itself due to location to be repositioned up to a much higher level.
Welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab, where your host, Dave Lindahl, dissects recent multifamily deals done by his guests. Dave will extract what went right, what went wrong, and a number of key takeaways so your next deal may be more profitable.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to this edition of Multifamily Deal Lab, where we dissect deals. And with me is Jim Stewart, who is back to talk about another deal that he's done. So, Jim, tell everybody who you are, where you're from, and let's start with that.
Yeah, sure. So, Jim Stewart from Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. Born and raised here, still live here, but spent a lot of time in the United States. Been doing multifamily for quite a few years now and loving it. Also had the other side of my life, which was corporate executive, business owner, all those sort of things as well. But definitely multifamily has always been my hobby, my favorite thing to do. I live, eat, breathe it. And so 2015, we started buying in the United States and never looked back since then. It's been really exciting, great. And that's when I had the opportunity to meet Dave. Well, 2014 to be specific. But yeah, so it's been great.
Yeah. So talk about the deal that we're going to talk about today. Number of units and where it was.
This is a smaller deal, but a very good deal. It's 44 units. It's in Fort Oglethorpe, Georgia, which most people say, where's that? Well, it's actually Chattanooga. And so Chattanooga, Tennessee, it's just on the Georgia side. So you're 15 minutes from our property to get downtown Chattanooga. And Chattanooga is a great market. So this is 44 units. They're all townhomes. They're all the same plan, 1,150 square feet, two bedroom, one and a half bath, front and back door, of course, because they're townhomes, built between 69 to 71. Classic Georgian style look to it with the extended roof over the front with those big white pillars coming down on an extended sort of front porch area. And the area looked like a great area where, because of proximity and obviously because of what's going on in that market, we felt this one could really do well for us.
All right. Before we get there, how did you come across this deal and how much was it offered on the market for?
Yeah, this particular one, through broker relation, Marcus and Milchap specifically on this one. And so the broker relationship is how we found out about it. And in terms of purchase price, there was two options. There was take over existing financing or pay a slightly higher price for putting new financing in. And we opted to put the new financing in. They had another offer in where it was an assumable taken with existing financing, but I felt we'd be more competitive by putting new financing in to shorten the time period because the more seller wanted to get out of the property. And $3.5 million.
Okay. So 3.5 assumption, and how much for the new financing?
So we did bridge on this, Dave.
What were the two different offers in the market?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Let me just think about that.
What was about the difference between the two prices, if you can remember?
Oh, the two prices, I believe it was about a $200,000 delta difference. Approximately.
All right. So the first point I want to make is the fact that you got this deal from a broker relationship in Georgia because you had actually, that was the market you decided to go into first, did a lot of business in right off the bat. You had come to the micro repositioning boot camp, I remember. That was the first time we met. And then apparently you liked the market so much because we did do that boot camp in Atlanta. You decided to focus on that market. And doing that, you did very, very well. So it was the broker relationships that you created while you were doing business in Atlanta that brought this deal to you.
Yeah,
so, okay, so I want to just talk about, for everybody's benefit, the difference between the assumption and the new financing. So typically, the seller has this deal on the market. He would like to have the deal assumed, basically because of the yield maintenance, the prepayment penalty, which is either a straight prepayment penalty, it's yield maintenance, or a defeasance. Regardless, he's going to have to pay more money. He's going to have to pay that out if somebody doesn't assume this loan. So that's why he said, if you assume it, you can get it for the lower price. If you don't assume it, it's going to cost you more. So he can put more money in his pocket. Now, you had a decision to make. Okay, between the assumption or pay more, you decided to pay more. Walk everybody through that decision-making process because this is going to come up a lot in the market that we're going into.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when we looked at it, I wanted to see, okay, if we did it by assuming the loan, how much capital would we need to raise? And what was the flexibility for us? Because now we've got all this capital employed because we're looking to renovate this, do the value add to it, to create the bump for our investors. So I'm looking at that side of it and we're saying, okay, that's going to take a lot more capital employed, because if we look at the other option, which is bridge financing, and back just under 2 years ago, bridge financing was a lot more favorable and we could get higher leverage. Even though the interest rate was going to be higher, we would only have that for a short period of time. So when we looked at that and that interest rate, which ended up being 5.05%, I might add, and we can get into that after, but we bought a rate cap, is that I'm looking at trying to give investors 15 to 20% annualized rate of return on this capital employed. That's a lot of dollars to try and pay. So if I can lever it up higher, I'm far better off. So when we did the calculation, it's about a $200,000 delta to assume the financing. But the problem was we had to put so much extra capital in because we couldn't lever with the assumable any of the CapEx. So we had to raise the CapEx, which meant that those dollars had to earn a rate of return on it. So for us, it made a lot more sense to pay $200,000 more for it, get the flexibility that we needed with the deal to be able to lever it up at a higher level, which we are still just running out that bridge right now. And I can talk about the refi we'll do. And so it just made a lot more economic sense when you looked at the total dollars potential when you underwrote it. One method, assumable, including the bridge where we had a lot less capital employed, higher rate of return essentially for the investors.
The calculation is going to be a higher rate of return overall. So what was the opportunity in this deal? 44 units, upside, value add, what was it?
Yes, so absolutely, it's 44 units. Looking at that market, there really hadn't been a lot of renovation in that market, so it was hard to get comparables. But when we looked at what was going on in the overall market with Volkswagen going there and the tech industry and expansion of distribution, you looked at the employment of the people, the demographics of the people coming in, and you look at the options for them with Class A. And we felt this property would lend itself due to location to be repositioned up to a much higher level. And so we were pioneering a certain amount in this. But I've done it before quite a few times, and my gut was saying we can unlock a lot of value here. We'll be the first, so we're going to lead the market, and which is exactly what's happened. Now we've got a whole bunch of other people following us now, renovating their properties and trying to catch up to us more or less in terms of rent. So we did that strategy, and so we went in and did a fairly heavy renovation because we had the bridge financing to do it. But the rate of returns were potentially quite significant because of doing that.
Okay. So how much per door did you project going in that you were going to renovate?
Yeah, it was right around, including exterior and interior, $25,000. We had some foundation works to do on this property, being older. And so we had a lot of people, when they look at the brick facade, especially in Georgia, there's a lot of them like that. And going in Tennessee, we saw a lot of cracks and different issues going on. And we knew we need to stabilize that. Otherwise, that was going to haunt us. So we put some money aside for that work to make sure. Also, it was affecting our subfloors inside, which was the number one complaint of that property.
Cracked floors?
Well, spongy, soft floors. Yeah. And so things were shifting below. So this was actually on a crawl space sort of situation. So there was posts and everything underneath with footings, and all of that needed some work at the same time because the ground was not the most stable there.
How much did you put into that? Was that like $250,000 project? Was it 44 units? How many buildings?
10 buildings, and they averaged between 4 to 6 units per building. So not all the buildings needed work, thank gosh. So that's put our number down. So we're just over the 100K mark on the works on that side.
All right. Explain to everybody what a $25,000 per unit lift looks like.
Yeah. So interior-wise, $18,000 was spent on the interior. So what we did is we renovated the kitchens. In this case, we first looked at doing new kitchen fronts. So basically, you take the existing cabinets, put new doors on them with the hardware, put new countertops on, new plumbing fixtures and sink, and new appliances, new flooring. We ended up in the kitchen. We got such a good deal on new cabinets. By the time you factored in the labor, it was just cheaper to put new cabinets because it gave us a delta for potential rent increases for the future that it wouldn't hold us back. So we decided to invest just a little bit more money. It was about $750 more per unit and put brand new cabinets in, which has worked out extremely well. I can touch on that after. We also put new flooring in, painted it, obviously, new lighting fixtures throughout. In the bathrooms, we refreshed the bathrooms. So same idea, cabinets where needed, but generally it was all new cabinets in there.
What types of countertops are you putting in? Are you resurfacing or are you putting in new?
We put man-made stone in this case. So it definitely was a lot of stone, we'll call it, or hard surface. So backsplashes with the tile. So basically, when we had it, and I've got some pictures here if you'd like to see what it looks like before and after, if that's a possibility.
Yeah. Do you want to take the screen?
Yeah, sure. If I can do that, let me just get over to the right part here. Okay, super. Well, let me just scroll down here. So I'm going to show you the exterior of it first. So you can see this is a classic Georgian property with the brick. Because it was built in two phases, 69 and then 71, there's slight different color in the brick tones between the buildings. And you see the pillars on it and that side of it. So we wanted to make it look a lot more modern and up-to-date. And we also rebranded this property. So it was originally called Cloud Springs. Now we call it Elements 44. And the 44 is for the 44 townhouses. So here is the after of that. So we've painted it.
Oh, wow.
We've now put door color to punch it. If I just go back, you can see we've taken the shutters of the units. We've taken the crown sort of molding at the top off the doors to make it look a lot more modern. We've painted it not a jet black, but a darker black in these pictures, the way the color is being picked up. It doesn't look as brilliant black as it is. And then the trim around the windows. So it's really changed the look of it.
Do you happen to have any pictures of the cracks in the sidewalls?
Not handy, Dave. No, but I can tell you down in buildings.
Looks like you get a run going right there on the picture to the right. You see that?
This one? Yeah, exactly. We do.
Just so people know, that's what you look for when you're looking at the facade of a property. You look for runs like that that could potentially be problems.
Especially when it's at a corner of a window. It's classic to happen. Yeah, coming down that. Yeah, good eyes on that. So basically the floor plan, you can just see 1150 square foot. We've got the first floor where basically you're coming in. We've got the large kitchen here. We've got the area, and these have washer dryer hookups. So you'll see in the next picture, we put washer and dryers in every single unit. And the reason why we do that is because we can charge additional rent for those. And when you do the calculation on the rate of return, it's generally those washer and dryers cost you, when they're side by side, $1,000 to $1,100. But when you can generate $50 to $60 to $75 a month rent on them, when you do the calculation of the value add, it's an incredible return. Upstairs.
So let me ask you a question there. So when somebody moves in, is that an option that they have to have the washer and dryer as a rental, or do you just get a higher rent because you have a washer and dryer in there?
It's all part of it.
Okay. Yeah. I know there are other people that actually rent them out, or there was a time where that was the thing. You rent out the washer dryer.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of places that do that. In our scenario, we bundled it together. So it's not an option. And that way we've captured that. And we also know every unit's got washer and dryers in it that are ours.
And by the way, one more thing. Sorry to keep interrupting you, but did you install those washer dryer hookups or were they there?
They were there before.
Wow. Really good. That's unusual for such an older building.
You're 100% right. And this property actually was fairly well maintained when we took it over, other than some parking lot issues, foundation issues, the spongy, squeaky floors. But beyond that, it wasn't that bad considering the era. Did we have to deal with galvanized piping or cast iron? There is still a little bit of it left, but generally we scoped those, but there was a lot of PVC changeover on it. So 75% of the property already been dealt with. Is there any aluminum wiring? No, this was all electrical. Stab lock in terms of the panels? No, this didn't have that issue. So we looked for those sort of things on the older properties that can trip you up or cost you money. And so we wanted to make sure in due diligence, we were clear of some of those things. So it's two bedrooms, Jack and Jill bathroom. So then basically when we look at, this is the before. And so you can see our kitchen here, the living room area, kitchen again, older flooring, older carpet, Jack and Jill bathroom, as I mentioned. Here it is after when we're done, basically. Mm. So what it meant to us is we underwrote this property. So it was just slightly over $1 million CapEx. We underwrote it based on raising the rents. I'll just add, when we bought it, if you rented a unit right then, it was at $785. The in-place average, though, was $735 for the property. So at $785, now we've renovated it. We underwrote it at $1050 to be conservative. And we underwrote it based on spending $500,000. Well, we knew $500,000 CapEx would easily get us $1050. We wanted to be conservative.
Okay, so hold on. So I want to go back to that point, too, because what did you base that $1050 off? You said, if I heard the first part of this, it was almost as if you were the first mover in the area. Now people are trying to catch up to you. What did you base those rents off of, thinking you get $1050?
Yeah. So we knew in the market that we basically had some units that had been slightly renovated. So they had put some granite in it, but they hadn't gone to this extreme of putting stainless steel appliances in, putting the backsplash. They would have older kitchen cabinets with arborite or laminate countertops on it. So we did this so that we could test the market. And so that if our underwriting was at $1050, so we knew the comparables were running in around that range. So we knew we could hit that mark. So then the strategy was, let's put and renovate some of these to this high level, which would be using the $18,000 per door on the interior, test it. If we get it to stick, so we started renting them at $1,200. And we had our first three ready, and they all rented within one weekend. And we went, what? Next weekend, we had two more ready. We said, okay, let's move it up to $1,250. Gone right away. Then we took a break through the holiday season, being Thanksgiving through Christmas. I don't believe in disturbing families at that point in time. So then we start up again in later January. And now we're at $1,300, and we're still knocking it out. Then we go to $1,350. And that's where we finished leasing the rest of them. Like, we just kept pushing it up. And where we are today, Dave, is we're at $1,395. We're still running 100%. So we still have room to push it up. Usually that's the marker. When you're still full, you still haven't hit that point yet. And I will give credit to the management company. Selena is phenomenal. So kudos to our property manager. She's excellent at being able to manage that.
What do you think the cap rate right now is on that deal?
I actually didn't calculate that, but it's going to be crazy high, because here's the thing. Actually, can I just share one more thing?
Yeah.
I just want to show you my underwriting and where the net NOI is. And I'm going to show you where we are today on our forecast. It's incredible. So this is definitely amazing in terms of, okay, so here we go. Now it's going to be hard to see. I get it. But what we've got here is basically end of year two, we're 333,695. But I go like this, here is our projection. We're running tight to this. For this year, we are projecting to run this property at an NOI of 484. Like, we're just blowing the doors off.
Wow.
This. And we're running pretty tight to this. Still averaging with 44 units, total units, occupied 42, 43. So we're even saying that. We've got projected vacancy, very low, but we've got some, call it, loss to lease going on to our rents. So it's still got room to even potentially do better than that. And so I just want to go back to this. So at year five, our NOI is 394, year five projection. So where this is going, Dave, is about to refinance out of the bridge. And because of that income number, if you take it at a seven cap right now, and then you take off basically with what we borrowed on our bridge, we borrowed effectively, I'll just say 3.4 million. We were able to borrow, call it just for easy math, about 100%. We raised 1,650 on it. Well, I'm going to tell you that 7% divided into the 484,000 gives us a cushion to give everyone 100% of our capital back in the summer. So some of the secrets are we've optimized the property by making it a very tenant-friendly community. So we really care about everyone. We've really made sure the maintenance is always top-notch, although we've got a lot of brand new stuff in there, so there's not a lot. But if there is anything, we try and take care of it immediately. So these are things to want to keep tenants living there. So typically the people that are moving out are because, one, they're deciding to buy a house. Two, they've been transferred to a different job. Otherwise, our retention's still there. And even on those original $1,200 ones, the first ones we rented, we're pushing them right up to market rate, and there's no pushback on it. So it's really worked well in this. And so what's happened is because we've pushed the rents up, now we're seeing other properties in the area renovating to our level and now coming up to us.
Wow. That's quite a success story. And at a time when there were so many crazy deals done the last couple of years at the height of the market, where people were relying on the rental growth in order to capture their value add, their bridges are coming due and they don't have the increase in the NOI in order to get the higher interest rates. And that's where a lot of operators are getting into trouble. I think talking to Mark Shula the other day, and he said it best, and you've got the same philosophy. This is not an appreciation game. This is a value add game. As long as you look at the business through a value add perspective, then you'll make out okay. If you're relying on appreciation, things are not going to go your way.
Yeah, we believe in forcing the appreciation so we can build. And then we take a conservative look as where we have kind of different levels we'll go to. And we have a stretch plan internally as to where we think it can go, but we test it, keep testing all the way. And then we'll add more money in once we know it's working.
So you've almost 3x the investor's money.
Pretty much.
At this particular point, that's pretty good. A short period of time.
And we plan to keep it for 5 years. Like that's what our business plan. So refinance it, obviously, assuming we can give 100% back, which is looking positive.
Which takes all the risk out of your business, you know, because the investors get their money back.
Exactly. And so now they get, in theory, rate of infinity on the cash flow. And this property will still cash flow at just over 8% with the refi on it. So our cash on cash will still be pretty strong. Not that we'll give them 8%. We want to cushion. So we'll probably first year go 6.5 on the refi, just so we got a bit of room. It's still their money. It's just that you don't want to give out every penny you've got. Like earlier in the week, we had, it's a metal roof. They had high winds, the roof half blew off the property.
Yeah. So something's always going to happen unexpected in these deals. All right, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions on most inspirational book that you've read.
Well, you know, if I go right back, Dave, to the very first, I'm going to say my very first book, which I think might be similar to you, but Earl Nightingale, Lead the Field. I bought a tape set. This was back when I was 23 years old. And that is, I keep going back to when I listen to that, and then ultimately it gets to the word and its attitude, but it was all the different parts to it. That is the part that shaped me the most out of anything.
And that is free on YouTube for anybody that's listening. Earl Nightingale's Lead the Field. It's about 3 hours and something.
Yeah.
It's really good. What are you reading now?
Well, actually, I happen to have it right on my desk. Blue Ocean Strategy.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
This is a reread for me. Yep. And the reason why it's a reread is, like a lot of us, are looking to amp up the business. And so currently, I want to amp up the capital raising. And I'm looking at studying how everyone's raising capital. And I want to be in the blue ocean side, not the red ocean with everyone else fighting it out. So I'm trying to come up with ingenious, innovative ways to raise capital that would be unique to others so that I'm not fighting the same way with everyone for the same person.
That's a great book to help you think that one out.
I actually got a couple that I'm rereading right now. 7 Habits of Effective People. I'm trying to squeeze every minute out of my day right now. So I'm going back to another, what I call foundation book for me, and rereading it. And I find, Dave, as I know you've said as well, each time you read it, you get little nuggets, because at that point in time, you need certain things resonate to you at that point in time. So yeah.
Absolutely. And then now, what's your most inspirational movie?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Or favorite?
Yeah. Well, I'd say favorite is Inception, which was...
Is that with Matt Damon?
No, that's Inception DiCaprio. And that's where they put you to sleep. And then you go different levels into your different realities and you keep going deeper and deeper. It just really blew my mind when you think about that, all the dimensions, because I really believe this is just a dimension we're in right now. So it just was, that was in terms of favorite. In terms of inspirational, there is some, I'm just drawing a blank on that one right now.
Okay. No problem. But I'm going to end this section of Multifamily Deal Lab. But before I do, I want you to give out your contact information in case anybody would like to get a hold of you.
Yeah, sure. So for RE Mentor people, I'll say jstuart, S-T-U-A-R-T, investments, plural, at gmail.com. So jstuartinvestments@gmail.com. And the phone number, 204-471-7727, 204-471-7727.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab, where we just dissected.
This has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. If watching on YouTube, please be sure to hit the like button, the subscribe button, so you don't miss the next session, and review the contact links on this page.